Okay, how much money do you think that his lowness has ordered spent in the Caribbean now to put pressure on the Venezuelan government? How much? They just sent the entire strike force with the Gerald Ford. They had, I think, 9 naval ships prior to that, and at least 10,000 Marines, plus 6,000 sailors on those ships. Now with the Ford there, they've got another 5,000 at least just on the Ford, not to mention its escort ships. How much money is Trump blowing while Americans are hungry, cold, having to choose each month which bill they aren't going to pay so they can survive? This man has no shame. He is individually destroying arguably the best chance the Republican Party has really ever had, I think, to make friends with a lot of the American public that have never taken to the Republican Party before. Trump is not showing any humanity. He holds that news conference last week, I guess it was last week, about affordability. He says, I don't want to hear about affordability. Our gas prices are down to almost $2 now. Inflation is almost completely gone. It's lies, lies, all lies, all the time, nonstop. So what's going to happen with Venezuela? I think with each passing day, the chances of an armed assault on Venezuela diminish. I think most probably because Vladimir Putin is not playing softball in Venezuela. He has sent down there some of their very top-of-the-line, we'll call them defensive armaments, just for kicks. And I think the U.S. will lose a lot of men, a lot of planes, and some ships if they really do try to invade and overthrow the government in Venezuela. But that's how it just looks right now to me. Could change tomorrow. Mitchell Henderson is back. Mitch is watching this very closely. Hello, my friend. Welcome back. And how does it look to you?
Well, yes. I've been thinking about timing on this. First of all, anything that he wants to do, he has to do between November now and April. April is when the rainy season comes again. Okay.
So the rainy season?
The rainy season.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And the rainy season is very rainy, usually. So it's... Like right now, it's the beautiful weather, nice sunny beaches, all that kind of stuff. But in a few
wonderful weather for a war, I get it.
Okay. It'll just start raining and raining and raining, and then it's a clock hour. Right. So that's one constraint that they're under there. Another thing is just a habitual constraint. And anybody in the audience who's been in the military, I know that you know what that constraint is, and that's called holiday routine. Yeah. And that is the U.S. military does not like to initiate anything between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day.
That's true.
In other words, during this period, that's when most soldiers take leave. Most soldiers go home, take leave. I remember... when I was in, I did not want to go on leave during holiday routine because the workload was very easy. It was very laid back and stuff, jovial. Right. It was a nice time to actually be in the military. So I would just stay. I took my vacation during other parts of the year.
Yeah.
All my sons went in the military. Anybody who's been in the military knows about holiday routine, okay? It's just classical. Look at this Admiral Holsey, black admiral that's in charge of Southcom. Well, this is not a DEI, politically correct war, so he put in his retirement papers.
Yeah.
And he put in his retirement for December 12th. This is a signal to you people, because he's the admiral, he's in charge, he has a better idea of the time frame. And he wanted to retire before this war actually initiated, okay? Because he understands holiday routine. He understands all this stuff. So he knew when to time his exit so that he wouldn't be the man that goes down in history that is ahead of this Southern Spear attack that they want to do. So my bet is that it'll come after January 1st. So let's go back, and this is something that I can relate to because I was there. So in Panama, because what's going on in Venezuela is much like Panama. Noriega, drug trafficking charges. Maduro, drug trafficking charges. Okay, the country drift, not obeying the United States. The same with Venezuela. Okay, so now we knew we were going to attack Panama for a long time. We knew we were going to attack Panama, overthrow Noriega and throw them in jail. We knew we were going to do that. We knew 2 years before we did it because in 1987. I took part in the planning of the invasion of Panama. Okay, so what they did, they do a thing called a tactical exercise without troops. So what they do is they bring the officers and commanders together and all the staff people, and you war game the invasion to figure out what you want to do. So this was the first part of making a plan to put in the can. To have on the shelf to pull off for the actual invasion. So my job was I was providing the tactical intelligence because see I had trained with the Panama Defense Forces and I knew Panama very well. I spent a lot of time down there. So they took me up to this notional cell to be the tactical intelligence guy to war game this realistically. Okay, because they do want to plan things realistically. So, but what happened? Well, what happened was Noriega, he was in the Panama Defense Forces. Okay, he was a general, right? So what did he know about Americans? He knew about holiday routine, okay? So what he did is he decided on December 15th, he told the Panama Assembly, like their Congress, to declare that Panama which is in a state of war with the United States. Okay, and then the next day, December 16th, at a PDF, that's a Panama Defense Force, a PDF checkpoint, there was a Marine officer in civilian clothes, and they killed him. Okay, they also stopped a Navy officer and his wife, and they beat them. They beat the wife, too, not just the guy. They beat them both, right? That's when they decided. So what happened is, Noriega figured if he's going to start stuff, he'll start it while we're on holiday routine, and maybe we won't have as bad a response. But in this case, Noriega took the initiative, and the United States had to respond. So we had to invade and get to war much sooner than we wanted to. Okay, he forced us to deploy before we wanted to. Now, just a year later. When we were in the Gulf War, when did we actually launch our invasion of Saddam's Kuwait and Kuwait and Iraq? January 17th. Uh-huh. So you see, we had the initiative of when we were going to attack, and what we did is we recognized our own holiday routine. Okay, so Noriega had a second source of information, and this was, he was working with the Medellin cartel. Okay, now I worked with the Cali cartel in Colombia, and one thing the Cali cartel told me is if somebody wants to do a deal with you, try to make the deal on Thanksgiving or Christmas or some big family federal holiday, because drug agents and public officials won't want to do it that day. And that's a dead giveaway. You know that they're the cops, because cops don't want to do it on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving. They want to be home with the family. See, a cop isn't going to actually get the $100,000 or more cash. He's not going to get it, so he's not motivated to just do it that day. A bad guy who's going to get paid over $100,000 for on a deal of some sort, he's going to give up his family holiday to collect $100,000. Like anybody, if you're really going to get $100,000, you'll give up your Christmas or you'll give up your Thanksgiving. Okay, and they know this. Okay, so the Medellin cartel, he met with these people, he talked with them, he knew, okay? Mm-hmm. I actually knew Medellin cartel guys in Guatemala in 92, and they told me the same thing, you know? They intentionally would try to do a first deal on a public holiday to see if you was a cop or not. If you hem-hawed around and said, oh, I can't do it that day, they just walk away from you, okay? They know you're the heat. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is what Noriega was doing. Noriega knew that we didn't want to go to war in December because we were on holiday routine. So this is sort of a lengthy explanation to demonstrate when we like to go to war. We don't like to do it until after New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. I think there's like some big football games and stuff those days too. So you know, that's another reason they're into that. So I don't think I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a lot of talking and him on around and stalling up until then, and that gives us time to build resources and stuff like that up. Now, as for an attack, we have several things paths that we can go down. One path is to just attack the drug organizations, like bomb drug organizations.
Right.
The upside of that is there'll be some furor over us bombing another country, but they're not going to want to get too bent out of shape about it because they're blowing up drug labs and stuff and drug trafficking infrastructure. Okay, but don't buy into this whole thing wholesale. Because Venezuela is not a drug-producing country. They don't make fentanyl. There's no fentanyl coming from Venezuela to the United States.
Or Colombia, right? Or is it coming out of Colombia? Do we know?
No, it comes out of Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, there's no benefit for them to make it in Colombia and ship it all the way to the United States. See, Mexico can't make cocaine. But they can make lots of fentanyl. So that's where the fentanyl is coming from. I mean, you know, businesses, it's like any other business. Some places right. have an advantage that other places do not have, okay?
Why is it so Colombia, seemingly, Mitch, your question,
yeah,
why is it that cocaine, the coca plants don't grow well in some areas? What's the deal? Why can't they, I don't want them to, but why aren't there places in old Mexico where they're growing cocaine, so to speak?
Well, you have to look at the area where it grows is in a certain area in the tropics. Okay,
yeah.
And when you look at Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia, what you have is you have these really tall mountains. Okay. Now, halfway down those mountains it becomes tropical. Okay, so you have 12 hours of light, 12 hours of dark. You have it doesn't get too cold, it doesn't get too hot. Okay, because you know plants are grow in areas that they're accustomed to, that they like. So the coca plant grows like on the Amazonian slopes of the Andes, and these are on the taller mountains because it's higher up. It's not low. It's pretty high, okay. So by the time you get up to Mexico, you're now getting out of the you're getting to where you don't have an even 12-hour day, 12-hour light, 12-hour dark. Okay, the little things like that can make the difference.
Can't they grow it in a greenhouse with climate control?
Well, you know that just wouldn't be. You know this is. The coca fields are big. There's lots and lots
of
coca.
So it takes a lot to get a little.
Yeah,
okay.
it takes a lot. You can't. It's not like a marijuana plant, like the whole plant. But what you got to do is you got to get all the leaves together. You got to squish them up in kerosene, and then once you dissolve the leaves and let them soak in the kerosene to draw out the cocaine stuff. Then you put in an acid. To extract the best, you put sulfuric acid in it, and it makes
health,
like this
health
black.
Food.
Yeah, wow. it makes like this black clay like stuff that they call pasuco, okay, mm-hmm. and that's cocaine base. And then you take that and you have to recrystallize it. That means you're going to put it in another solvent, like an ether-like thing, but almost anything will do. Not a solvent that is more, more liquidy than kerosene is. So something a little bit higher, lighter than kerosene. Then you use hydrochloric acid to finally make the powder, which is cocaine hydrochloride, and that's active that your body can use and get high off of. Okay, so anyways, it's a big process, and the Andes in Venezuela are not high enough. Okay, the Andes reach up in Venezuela and they go along the north coast, and they're just not high. Okay, so you don't get that perfect weather. Venezuela and the Andes in Venezuela are dry; they're not jungly. Okay? Like when you get when you get on the north coast of Colombia, those big Andes mountains they're mostly dry too. It's when you get a little bit south of there that the jungle begins. Okay, so those dry mountains are not good enough to grow cocaine. So Venezuela is just a transshipment point. It's not really a production point. Okay.
Very good.
So, but you know, the Venezuelan government, I have no doubt that they're in the drug business to get foreign exchange. The United States CIA gets its fund money from running drugs too. I mean, everybody knows the CIA is into drug trafficking. I can go back to the Vietnam War.
Yeah, 50 years they've been at it. Or more?
Yeah, I was in Laos on Air America Airlines. Not Airlines, it was just Air America.
Yeah.
It was the CIA running the war there. I was on planes and we were picking up heroin. I flew from Laos into Thailand to knock on Sakanahorn with a load of double Euroglobe heroin, processed good heroin. Okay, and that was going to be...
What kind of planes were they flying
airport.
Back then?
Oh, these were just anything type of Cubs, any
DC-3s,
DC-3s, a lot of DC-3s, stuff like that. Just anything they could. There was no standard aircraft. It was just whatever they could get their hands on. Okay, so they did it back then, and it was open. You can see these. If you see these little films of the guys in Vientiane and these bars, and I've been in these bars. Okay, they got the signs there making fun of it. They say heroin airlines and stuff. You know, that's what they call their America. So this is not, this is known. This is, only naive people would think that our government doesn't do it. Of course they do it, And I've had this, before when I was working in Guatemala, the DEA attaché there, he told me, he pointed out to the CIA guys and other people in the government that were involved in smuggling drugs to the United States. He's the DEA guy. He knows. They're the CIA, they're untouchable. So, the way it is. And you hear these stories over and over, Barry Adler, SEAL, all these guys, the CIA is helping them run the drugs into the United States. This is not
Did you give him a middle name, theory. Barry SEAL?
Adler, SEAL.
Adler?
Yeah, Adler.
That's Jewish.
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, the businessman,
Yeah, of course.
What can you say?
Just business, right?
So Venezuela does it. Of course they do it. We do it. Everybody does it. But it's wrong when people that we don't like do it. That's when it's wrong. Okay. So,
what a world, huh? Jeez, you're so right.
So anyways, what could they do? What can we do? The first thing is just hit the labs, and there won't be a lot of cheers. That's a safe, very safe thing to do. If he avoids bombing civilian areas and avoids bombing military installations, government installations, but hits the labs. That's relatively safe to do. It's not going to accomplish much. It's very expensive to do, but it's relatively safe. It's not risk-free, but it's relatively safe. The second thing that they can do is go ahead and attack military and government buildings down there with the hopes that the people may raise up, okay? But that, on its face is not that's going to be very controversial in the court of world opinion. Okay, people may not rush to protest the bombing of drug labs, but they will rush to protest the bombing of a Latin American country that, you know, that we're just picking on. It's not going to make us look good. Next option is full regime change, and I don't know. I think see if we go for full regime change, what we can do is I think we will try to do that sort of like in the Panama model a little bit, because we didn't take over Panama in order to do that. All we did is take over key places and see, like, we could send the CIA paramilitaries and the Delta Force and SEAL teams and stuff like that in to try to capture Maduro and some of the leadership, okay, and put them on trial to justify our invasion. At the same time that we're doing that, we could we start off by just degrading their military assets by bombing them, because we got a lot of bombs there. We got a lot of cruise missiles there. We can do a lot of damage. And then what we'd want to do is gain control of the skies fairly easy. They don't have very many aircraft. We can blow them out of the air pretty fast. The carrier group has immense anti-aircraft capabilities, okay? Plus, they got 75 fighters there. They can just go blow the Venezuelan Air Force out of the sky. The second thing that we can do is we have the E-6 Prowlers. We have the arm missiles and stuff. Well, we can take out their anti-aircraft artillery on the first wave, okay? We can take out their radar installations. We have what they call anti-radiation missiles, and you can fire these at standoff, and they home in to the radars, the enemy air radar, and blow up the radar. So this is an easy thing to do. Taking out the Venezuelan Navy, piece of cake. We can do that very quickly. They don't have a very big Navy. Now, if we wanted to, we could possibly land troops, not to take over the whole country, but to take over a sort of a beachhead and take over an area where a government of national liberation can take hold, then we can supply that government to do fighting against the Maduro government. Okay, and the place we'd want to go is, you know, Lake Maracaibo is where half of their oil industry is at, and this is the most developed active half of their oil industry. That area is the most anti-Maduro area of Venezuela. That's Zulia Province and Falcon Province, and this is northwestern Venezuela. If we landed there, we might have some actual people supporting us. And what it would be is just us making a beachhead and then us supporting them. We could, like, there's two points. We could take Coral and Maracaibo City. And if we just took those two cities, and they're easy to invade. They both have an east and west beach. We can envelop them from behind and stuff. And we can quickly take those cities. And we could hold the Venezuelan army at bay long enough to get some local forces raised up and stuff, okay? Get a little revolution going. Okay, then all we'd have to do is, since we've got control of the skies, we can give them air support and stuff and let them do it. The goal is not necessarily, you know, I know America. America's goal is to just disrupt the country and let it fight each other forever, like Libya. Okay, we'll split the country into a couple pieces and then let them slug it out forever. Just totally destabilize Venezuela, destabilize Latin America, basically. It's just the kind of thing that Trump would love to do, you know?
I don't know about Trump. I don't know what to think of him anymore. He's 79. I think his mind is not nearly as sharp as it was in his first term.
There's nothing sharp. He's
flaccid. Mentally, yeah. Physically, he's just no.
Oh yeah, he doesn't know what's going on and stuff. He trolls the people. I think he fails to recognize that if he wants to, if he wanted to get elected in 2026, he can't just throw the world into turmoil and expect everybody to put him to give him a Republican Congress. People want to feel they want things to be normal. They want things to be peaceful. They want to go about their lives, and he's disrupting everybody's lives. Okay, not only that, but he just blindly and stupidly he cannot listen to anybody else. I do not expect him to listen to the Democrats, but half of his supporters are against Israel, does not hear them. You know, he doesn't hear that.
No, the instructions are straight ahead.
Oh, yeah.
No deviation.
The United States, you know how the United States was once a colony of Great Britain? The United States is a colony of Israel. Israel taxes us. When we give them
all these billions
of dollars, that's us paying taxes to our king, our Lord.
That's correct.
Israel.
You're 100% correct.
Okay.
It's worse than that, too.
So we're a colony of Israel, you know?
Yeah.
There was something that, you know, 20 years ago, there was fringe groups out there that would use the term ZOG, or Zionist Occupation Government. I hear mainstream people using the term Zionist Occupied Government now. Mainstream people. This is no longer a meme said by the fringe. This is a meme used by mainstream people. So times have changed drastically, and Trump is unaware of it. He thinks everybody's just going to go along with what he wants. He just thinks people are going to do that. And
that's right.
You know, the thing is Israel knows it's in trouble. You can already see, like, Trump is attacking Marjorie Taylor Greene and Candace Owens and. And they're piling on them and stuff because they're under a lot of pressure to shut down the anti-Semitic or antiseptic speech out there. Okay?
Antiseptic. Well, that's good. That's funny. Take a look at the video at the top of the homepage. It's
that's
pretty interesting satire.
Wow. It is. Yeah, they just call it like it is. But see, I'm still, you know, I don't know what Israel will do for a false flag to change everybody's mind. But with 75% of the American people against Israel, they have to do something dramatic and catastrophic to alter people's perceptions.
That's true.
Something absolutely traumatic to the American people. Something that will shock us. Okay, it's got to be something really big. I don't know what it could be. You know, they're going to have to. It's a false flag, so it has to be something that they blame on another country. Iran and Venezuela are friends, so if we start like bombing Venezuelan government military bases, this could be what their false flag scenario. Their black propaganda scenario is that, Iran to help Venezuela set off a bomb in New York City. Okay, so, you know, it's got to be really big. It can't be something small. Listen, even if it's very, very big, even if it's traumatic and disastrous, I think Israel already knows that a good portion of the American people are going to blame Israel for it. They're going to know that it was Israel that did it.
And part of that.
And that's why there'll be a lot of political repression. They'll have to get rid of no protests, no free speech, and no religion unless it's Christian Zionism. That's okay. But any other kind of religion will be unacceptable.
Wow. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, these
we'll
are just
see.
Possibilities. I'm not in on the plan, so I don't know exactly what they're going to do. But you could just, you know, the bottom line is you know, don't think that these people are smart. They're not smart. And don't think that they're stupid. They're not stupid either. What they are is they are evil. There is no evil thing that they will not do. Look at what Israel does in Gaza. Look what they do to their own people. Look what they do to American citizens over there. And then you then think, oh, Israel wouldn't do this, or Israel would not do that. No, Israel would do any evil thing that they thought necessary. They will do it.
Anything.
There's no morality. True. They are pure 100% evil.
Yeah, and for you Jewish people, or those who identify as being Jewish or listening now, who care about reality, you already know the game. You understand. I'm not talking about you. This is an issue of international Zionist political. It's absolutely unstoppable at this point. I don't know how you could stop it. I've thought about that. I don't know how it could be stopped.
Keep in mind that one of the goals of Zionism is to identify itself with Judaism. But listen, Zionism is Judaism without God. Okay, these are atheist people. They don't care about God. They're against God. Okay, so we're not talking about Jewish people. We're talking about Zionist people. Okay, and keep in mind, we have all the Christian Zionists in this country, Speaker Johnson, all these people, all these clowns up there and stuff. So, it's boiling up, all this stuff. Seeing what, just following the trends in the media, seeing these people attack each other. So you have two narratives. You have the narrative that, the Christian Zionist narrative is that Christ is coming back for Israel and for the Jews. Okay, then you have the actual Christian narrative that, first of all, most Christians don't even have an opinion about end times. They're amillennialists. Like the most of the official church theology doesn't even talk about the end times or anything like that. But the ones who do, that are not Zionists, do not see it that way. They don't see it that way at all, and they will be victims of this. But now I see another counter argument. I see another counter argument coming up that says that, it's not true that Christ is coming back for Israel and the Jews. That is not true, but none of this is going to happen anyway. That is the attack that they're taking. So.
Where are you getting this? Who's putting that out?
It's on YouTube. It's what's it called? It's called. I have to look up the site. But they've just come on in the last month or so. They start putting out videos, and they're saying, "Oh no, Christ isn't coming back for the Jews." And what the message of these videos are is, just go about your life and forget about all this stuff, because that's not something Christians are involved in. In other words, if you look at Matthew, the thing that said, in the days of Noah, people were drinking and eating and marrying and going about their lives until sudden destruction meets them. They're preaching you to do as the people did in the days of Noah. Just ignore everything that's happening. Okay. So,
I'll tell you right now, the American birth rate is at its lowest. It's historical low. I don't see pregnant white women out there. I'm sure there are minorities, but I don't see pregnant European American females. I don't see little babies. I don't see strollers. I used to see them all the time. I don't see them anymore.
Maybe I live in the wrong area. That's what Marxism was about. It was to destroy the family and stuff. I mean, it's just, they've succeeded. I mean, feminism is destroyed marriage, basically. Okay? Because, listen, if you're a feminist, you are a Marxist. I don't care if you want to call yourself a Marxist or not, but feminism
is
a
communist
Marxist
idea.
Let's
don't even use the M word.
Yeah. It is. It's just pure Marxism. You are not anything in between, okay? There's no halfway, okay? So feminism is man-hatred, okay? We have the Me Too movement. You know, if you look at a woman, that's an assault. That's a sexual assault to look at a woman. To talk to a woman, okay, now you're getting very, very close to a sexual battery, okay? To actually talk to them is like a major sin. I mean, who's going to risk their future, their career, their life to talk to a woman? This is intentional. They don't want you talking to women. They don't want you to have a birthday.
No, no, no.
They want poor, ignorant, stupid people that will do as they are told.
Correct.
They do not want intellectual, free-thinking people. Okay, people who call themselves free thinkers, they're not free thinkers. They are, like, dogmatic in
maybe the most regimented of all. I agree.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. It's all about conformity. I mean, just look at Democrats, which are Marxists. It's all about conformity. If you don't have to, it doesn't matter if you're against Trump or for Trump. If you're not, if you don't think like they do, you're the problem. Okay, this is what the Bolsheviks did, and they killed over 100 million people. Okay, if the Democrats ever get back into power again, I mean, this isn't going to happen because the world's going to fall apart before that happens. But if they ever got back into power again, if you do not think like them, if you're not a gay sissy tranny, okay, they're going to hunt you down and kill you. Okay, they will put you in concentration camps. They will exterminate you. They'll do it. They've done it before.
Oh,
this is the mindset.
Well, come on. These are the same people that injected 5.5 billion people on this planet with the death vax. That's who we are talking about here. It's the same
people.
Yes,
I mean,
they've shortened everyone's lives by 20-30%, maybe more. If you're dead, your life has been shortened, period. But they've done this. It's not a maybe. It's a done deal.
Listen, do we live in a time of pure evil,
abject.
The end
Absolute.
Times of the tribulation of all these things. Listen to me. The thing that people got to remember is this. Let's be realistic about this. God knows that human beings are stupid and easily confused. So when he's sending you a message, it is crystal clear. That we are in the end times is crystal clear. There is no argument against it. It is obvious we are. That we are in the tribulation is crystal clear. That Israel is the Antichrist is crystal clear. There shouldn't be discussions about it. This is what it is. It is what it is, you know? And he's not trying to make it mysterious and arcane. He's trying to just slap you in the face and says, hey, look at your world. Look at your society. I mean, I go back to the 1970s. When I read The Great Planet Earth, which I don't recommend because that's Christian Zionism, okay?
Oh,
when I read that book back then, every 5 years, maybe something pertinent to the end times happened. Then in the 1980s, well, maybe every couple years, something pertinent and big, pertinent to the end times happened. Then in the 1990s, well, maybe once every 2 years or something, okay? Then by the 2000s, once every year. By the 2010s, six, seven things a year were happening that were very pertinent to the revelation and the tribulation and the end times. Then by 2021, under the COVID dictatorship, hey, we're there. Okay, now by then it was like once a week. Then it was once a day. Here we are in 2025. It's many times a day. There's stuff in the news that is screaming at you that this is the tribulation and we are in the end times. It's screaming at you. It is obvious. But yet there's people saying, oh, no, it's not happening yet. You know, it's just like, what does it take? You know,
good luck.
People in Gaza, they know it's the end times in Gaza. In the West Bank, they know it's the end times. In Ukraine, they know it's the end times. It's just that it hasn't hit here yet, big time like that. And by the time that hits you, it's way too late for everything.
I agree.
So anyways, I encourage people to think for themselves. And even if you're not religious, you know, get my book, The Final Wars, on Chapter 9. In secular terms, I explain to you how everything's going to crap. And you will understand that there is nothing that Trump can do, or nothing that Harris can do, or nothing that anybody can do to stop World War III from happening. There is nothing. You see what all the diplomatic stuff is, and you see that they're arguing, that they're trying to force stuff down people's throats that they cannot accept. Russia's surrounded on three sides by NATO. They are not going to let us have the South. They won't do it. They'll never let us do it. They will go to nuclear war before they do it. China, they're already cut off from the Pacific Ocean by the first island change. They are not going to give up control of the South China Sea. They won't do it. Taiwan is theirs. They want Taiwan because that is the break in the first island chain. That's part of it. They want it back. Okay, they eat 57 million tons of seafood a day. They need access to the ocean because that is food security.
Wow.
And what do we do?
57 million tons a day.
Yes, we send our Navy ships through the South China Sea all the time, and we resist them building military bases on those little islands out there to protect their fisheries from. It's their food security. It's a life and death thing for them. We're threatening. We are an existential threat to China, to Iran, and to Russia. This will result in thermonuclear war. In Chapter 9 of my book, The Final Wars, you look at the point of view of Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. Look at their point of view, and then you understand why there will be World War III. In secular terms, we're not even talking about religion here, people. Just secular terms. You'll understand why there will have to be a World War III, why it's inevitable. So that book is The Final Wars, Mitchell Henderson, available on Amazon. I also tell you how to get prepared for the Civil War that's coming here. Okay, listen, the Civil War is inevitable. You've heard during the Biden administration all the anti-white hatred and stuff like that. Okay, let me flip back in history to the 1950s in Kenya, okay? Jomo Kenyatta, he started the Mau Mau movement. And what they did is they said, they started preaching, oh, we got to kill all the white people, we got to take their land, we got to kick the white people out of Kenya, blah, 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 and just they preach hatred for the white people. So finally in 1952, the Mau Mau Rebellion broke out. In 1950, the British government outlawed the Mau Maus, okay? So they went underground, they stored up weapons and stuff. Then they unleashed their attack, okay? And for any black people listening in the audience here, the reality of it is, who did the Mau Maus kill? Who were most of the people that they slaughtered? They slaughtered black people.
Same old story. It never changes in Africa. It's
they
black slaughtering
black people
blacks.
That did not go along with them. That was the brunt of their. They did kill some white people and stuff, but not anywhere near on the scale that they killed black people. So these people for black liberation and black hatred, okay, that it's not just white people they're going to kill. Historically, they end up killing far more of their own. And this is not like dying in battle against the whites. This is going to black areas that did not support them and exterminating the people there for not supporting them. Because any leftist ideology, any Marxist satanic ideology includes the fact that if people don't think like you, you must kill them. Okay. The Democrat, look at after Charlie Kirk got dead, everybody's, all the Democrats are cheering and laughing about Charlie Kirk getting dead. They're showing you how they are. They don't mind killing you, okay, if you don't
Not
think like they do.
No.
So
human life has never been less valuable to them.
Yes, right
now. We're back to the same mentality of World War I, World War II. They're ready to go. They don't care.
Yep. We just need to spark to light the fire. I mean, look, the war started on June 22nd. World War III started then. We just need to kick it off now, the actual fighting.
True.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely correct. There was a story last week that Maduro would entertain a staged exit. That's what it was, something like that. Mm-hmm. So there's talk going on behind the scenes here. I don't know what role that so-called Nobel Prize-winning communist, well, whatever she is down there, is going to play. But she's one of Trump's people.
She'll be our puppet. You know?
That's it. No, she'll be one of Trump's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hand-picked.
She's a Trump puppet. Hey, listen. Yeah. She is a Trump puppet. Let me tell you the astuteness of this woman. Okay. She said that if she became the president of Venezuela, the first thing she would do was move the Venezuelan embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. What is that telling you there? What master does she serve?
That's funny. Yeah.
Not only that, but in the same vein, she will allow gay marriage, abortion, and tranny surgeries and stuff for the kids.
Oh, okay? how
despicable. So this is who she is.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Not good. Not good at all.
Yeah.
And getting worse. Trump, by the way, continues to use the office of the president to make deal after deal. Now the word is it's $63 billion. His family may be getting involved with the Saudis and their big real estate sci-fi thing over there in Saudi Arabia. Of course, want nukes. So as president, he might enable them to have a few nukes. But he says, oh, I have nothing to do with this. My sons are running the family business. I don't have anything to do with it. Who believes that? Nobody. It's him. He's merchandising himself. He's making a buck wherever he can. It's disgusting.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's look at it. What did Hunter Biden do with his daddy?
Same thing.
The family business. Same thing. All of these people. You know, you can go into Congress or the Senate now, and you'll be a millionaire off of $175,000 a year salary. You can end up a millionaire if you go to Congress or Senate or president.
Oh yeah, that's almost it. Unless you are highly moral and principled, if you get elected to Congress, you're a made millionaire, maybe multiple times over. That's just the way it works. It's the money's there.
Sometimes I wish I would have had this information a long time ago because, you know, the ideal thing that I could have done was as soon as I came of age, I could have run for Congress. Just think, three terms in Congress, 6 years in Congress, and you get a full lifetime retirement with full medical benefits, blah, blah, blah. Why didn't I do that? That would have been, and not only that, I could have become a millionaire also.
Absolutely.
Without doing anything to earn it at all.
No, interest-free loans, you name it. It's all...
Yeah.
They all get it. If you play ball, you get in. And by the way, you don't get in at all unless you're already in.
Yeah.
They'll give you the money to run. They'll install you. And I mean, you're already there.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. How did it get to be so evil, so utterly corrupted? And I hate to say it, but it's the same Zionist ethos, always at work, always.
Yes, always.
No matter what it is. I don't care what part of this culture or society it is. Who controls it?
Well, listen, I talked about this before, and I stand by it. What we live in is we live in a consensus reality. That's what everybody lives in. We're born into this consensus reality, and we unthinkingly acquiesce to it. It is created. This is a Jewish constructed consensus reality. Think about your science fiction, Rod Steiger. Think about your sitcoms and how the family should be. Norman Lear. It's all Jewish constructed. Both the positive and the negative things. It's usually Jewish constructed.
Right.
You know. So
that's true.
It's not
totally
a Christian
true.
Society.
Okay. No, sir.
It's not at all.
No. Okay, Mitch, thank you.
You're welcome.
Another great report, as always. We appreciate it. Talk to you next week. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Anything could happen. 10 days until Thanksgiving. How's that? 10 days.
It's good. I think there's a good chance we may be able to make it through New Year's without the shit hitting the fan.
Let's hope so.
We'll see.
All right.
That's just a theory of mine. It's from experience.
Got it. Well, it makes sense. Okay, let's see. All right, talk soon. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mitchell Henderson. All right, that's our Monday program for you. Be right back tomorrow night, 21 hours. Thank you for being here. Take good care and give some thinking about trying to prepare. I know it's difficult. Americans are really hurting financially now by design, and that's sad. That's sad. That's what they planned, and that's what they've got. Back with you tomorrow night. Talk then. Be safe.